Hello, and welcome to How to Make a Memory, the show that explores the items we make for one another and how they impact our relationships. My name is Jen Tierney, and this week I'm talking with my friend Bronwyn about how she makes digital art. I met Bronwyn about 15 years ago. One of the first things I noticed about her was that she is a creative person. It's the first characteristic that jumped out at me, and it's what has kept me interested in her life and intrigued by the conversations I have with her whenever I do get a chance to see her. So about 5 years ago, she mentioned to me that she was starting a project to create what became playsets. It is such a cool project. So I knew I wanted to have her on to talk about the conception of it, how it came to be, her experience with Kickstarter, and some of the successes and trials and tribulations she faced as she brought the project to life. A few notes before we get started this week. One of the things that you'll hear us reference a few times in this show is PAX, which is a convention for gaming and gamers that's held in a few different locations annually. My husband and I have gone every year since it first came to Boston. It's something that we look forward to every year. And Bronwyn will talk a little bit about going to PAX as an exhibitor and about what PAX meant for her and on the game that she created. Also, I would like to apologize for the sound quality in this episode. Bronwyn's sound came through just like any other person who I interview. However, I didn't have my mic turned on, so all of the recording that you will hear is just me talking straight into my laptop. I apologize for the sound quality on my end, and hopefully that won't happen again in the future. One other quick thing before we get to Bronwyn's conversation is that we're heading into the second month of the Two Pods a Day campaign for the beginning of this year. I was featured early in January, and I have just been loving watching for updates every day on the new podcast recommendations. It's been so cool to find some new podcasts from other indie podcasters like myself. If you're looking for some new things to listen to this year, I highly recommend you go check them out on Facebook or Twitter. It's Two Pods a Day, hashtag the number two pods a day, and hopefully you'll find something that you really love. Okay, now here is my conversation with Bronwyn. Hope you enjoy.
Hi, Bronwyn.
Hi.
thank you for agreeing to join me on my podcast.
Happy to be here.
Excellent. So tell me a little bit about what you make.
I make digital art that is primarily interactive. I do a lot of mobile app work, but I've also been trying to get into VR recently. But mainly I do like 2D work for interactive applications. Specifically for the last 4 years, I've worked on this project called Playsets, which is a digital replacement for tabletop maps and miniatures for whatever role-playing system or made-up game you want to use to play with your friends over the internet wherever you are.
Yes, which is fantastic. It's just such a
crazy
cool idea.
I'm trying to remember the quote of like, playsets is a nightmare made of dreams and infinite possibilities or something like that. I'm trying to remember it. It is this really weird toy that is inspired by Dungeons and Dragons and other role-playing systems. Yeah, it's like action figures in real time with your friends over the internet.
Yeah, I wish I had had a real solid occasion to use it because I had really wanted to back when you first told me about it, which was probably like 4 years ago now. And I remember having a group of friends and we tried to have a remote D&D game start up. And I was like, oh, perfect. We can use playsets. And then everybody just flaked out on me and it never turned into a thing. So, yeah.
That was our biggest problem, too, was like we didn't actually play because we didn't have a game master of any kind who could like devote that kind of time to running a game. So Yeah. So like, it was very much the same situation. We'd get someone who was ready to run a game and we'd all log on and we'd like find a couple bugs, but like we'd be there and then it's like, okay, well, that's all the time I have for tonight. And like, maybe we'll meet next week. And then we'd all flake out and we'd never play again.
Oh, that's so rough. Yeah. I think that that happens with a lot of people when it comes to trying to do remote games. I know that I don't know how much you've talked to Gabe about the game that he runs with the guys, but I think that their deep, deep bromance is what holds that together.
Well, and there has to, like, the level of commitment to it from Gabe is what makes that work. Like,
it is. It's astounding.
Like, someone has to put in the effort mm-hmm. to run the game.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a job. Like, it's a legitimate commitment of time. And most people don't have the love for it to commit that amount of time to it.
Yeah, you have to have a love for the game and a love for creation.
And a love for the your people friends. You're playing yeah. with. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you really do. It's all those things.
We started playsets because we were three friends who had made some games together before, and we wanted to play D&D together. We wanted to play games together. And, you know, it was myself and my husband and our friend Alex, who has been best friends with my husband since they were five, I think. Like, we refer to Alex as Tony's first wife.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we wanted to play games together. And so we decided, why not have our next project be this way to play games together. And for me, it was a dream come true because I am such a nerd, and the idea of drawing stuff like items for a D&D game full time was like too good to be true. So of course I was in love with the idea. And, you know, it was essentially just, we didn't want it to be a tile builder. We wanted it to be some pre-built environments that you could just like kind of drop into and make up a story around. And ultimately that wasn't the right direction for it. I think the users responded much more to being able to make their own maps. And that was something that we learned later on. And we definitely pivoted in that direction to like make it more of a builder than a pre-made map program application. But we ran a Kickstarter campaign because we felt like we had something that at the time there wasn't anything really on the market. There was like Roll20 was in its very, very early days, and that was pretty much it. There wasn't really anything else. Like Wizards of the Coast, when fourth edition came out, they had announced that there was going to be an online application that would let you play like with your friends in real time. And it never happened. It never materialized for a lot of reasons that I am much, much too familiar with, which is that it's just really hard to make a giant sandbox game where people can do whatever they want, but also still have measurable rules, like measurable distances and, you know, boundaries and line of sight and all of these other things that play into rules that people want, but also you can do whatever you want because it's D&D.
Yeah.
The whole idea is you can do whatever you want. And that makes things really complicated when you're trying to make an interactive map that people can do whatever they want on. But we had something pretty cool. So we did a Kickstarter campaign that was successful. And the bragging point for me was that the guys from Penny Arcade backed us.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's fantastic. We just bought our tickets for PAX East yesterday.
Oh, man. Oh, PAX is so good. I'll get to PAX in a minute. But so these guys, like, I mean, it's Penny Arcade, and I've purchased things from Penny Arcade. I've read the comic for years, and we were in the middle of the Kickstarter campaign, which is a month long and is constant marketing and constant like updates. And we were not prepared enough. We thought we were prepared, but we were not prepared enough. And so it was, you know, 18-hour work days to do this campaign. And so I was in like the 2 hours, in the middle of the 2 hours of sleep I was getting one night, in the middle of it, I got a call from Tony, who was out of town, and he's like, "Bronwyn, the guys from Penny Arcade just backed our Kickstarter, and they backed it at like a high level. Like they backed it at like the $500 level." And I was so delirious and sleep deprived that I didn't believe it at first.
Yeah, and like, this is a dream. I'm dreaming right now.
this is not a real situation. This is not actually happening. And like the fact that they invested an amount of money into a project that I was on that was more than I have spent on merchandise that I have purchased from their website, which isn't a small amount, but like, yeah. So that was really amazing. So the Kickstarter campaign was successful, and, you know, we went into beta testing, and like during the Kickstarter campaign, we found out that, you know, just releasing for the iPad wasn't going to be sustainable. And so we switched over to Unity, which let us do multi-platform, but meant that we had to completely rebuild everything from the ground up.
Sure, of course.
We've done multiple times.
Yeah.
Is completely make everything from scratch. And like playsets, like the art for playsets is like making a puzzle one piece at a time. Like it's like making it a giant, like thousands of pieces, like jigsaw puzzle, one piece at a time, and thinking you know how the big picture is going to look when it's all put together, but not really knowing. So that's like really complicated.
Yeah. It sounds like computer programming.
It's basically computer programming with images.
Yeah.
That makes any sense. It's like building with pictures more than it is creating like an image that is a cohesive composition, which is a really strange way to make art. So we went from beta, we went live, and we actually, because of very poor timing and, you know, overestimating how much we could get done in certain timelines, we released playsets a week, I think at maximum 2 weeks after my daughter was born.
Oh my goodness. I was like, so where is Zelda in all this? She's now.
So like Tony and I refer to it as like we had two kids at the same time. Like we had two babies born within a week of each other. And one was was connected to our careers, and one was a physical human being. And they both required the same amount of attention. And that's a lot. But playsets went great. The launch went great. We submitted an application to Indie Mega Booth.
Love the Indie Mega Booth.
Yeah. So Indie Mega Booth, for those who don't know, is a collective of indie games that like pitch in together for PAX so that they can get a spot on the main floor, but only have to pay for like a single table sized booth, and they can all be in it together. And so like everyone pitches in and you get a certain amount of space and you get a certain amount of equipment and you're there with all of the other indie titles, but like you have to apply and like you have to be approved by their committee. And yeah. And so we got accepted. So we were able to go for and be like on the main floor. And I made this crazy like decoupage 3D cardboard like game board as our table with iPad stands, and like I brought my A game with like the crafting skills and pulled all-nighters, and like I flew Zelda out to her grandmother's in St. Louis And then she was 5 months old and then flew out and met the guys out in Seattle, spent like two all-nighters finishing everything in like our booth and, you know, an update for the game, obviously at the last minute because the venue has no Wi-Fi. And we're an internet-based game, so we had to make like an offline version. But it was amazing. People responded really well. And before the floor opened, there were people doing laps, like people who have tables or people who are presenting or, you know, like people who are there on guest passes and, you know, not the public, do laps and like go around and look at everything. And this is my other bragging point. So Tim Schafer, he did Day of the Tentacle, which is like one of my all-time favorite video games. It's like one of the things that got me into digital art in the first place was like doing a lap and was passing through the Indie Mega Booth area. And my crazy decoupage 3D D&D map made him stop.
Oh, what a dream come true.
He's like, how did you guys get this here? Like, what? Like, what? Because we've had some serious problems, like, getting a booth set up. Like, how did you guys get this here? And we're like, we drove it up in a van. And he's like, and we just, like, start. I mean, I got to talk to Tim Schafer about my game. And that in itself was worth any of the sleepless nights and, like, crazy stress panic attacks over getting, you know, things done by launch. And so PAX went great. Our response at Indie Mega Booth was great. I mean, I got to make a world. Like, I got to be in charge of how everything looked and like make this weird, beautiful toy that didn't really do anything without input. But like, when you like occasionally we would see maps from people that like got real weird with it and they were so cool. Like they were really neat. One of the things we did at PAX to get people to come to our booth was we did like a daily dungeon design challenge. So you could come to our booth and design a map within 15 minutes. Like we were trying to make a point that our builder was super fast and easy to use. So you come, you build a map in 15 minutes. Whoever builds the best map at the end of the day gets a skeleton key, which is like a lifetime. Everything is free on playsets. But so we had one girl who was like 9, who was just amazing, and she was so excited when she won. It was just really cool to see like the stuff that people made.
So having a 9-year-old sit down and use your platform, I mean, not only does it prove the point that it's very easy because someone so young could sit down and do it, but I think that illustrates how children are, they have fewer restrictions in their minds of what is possible. And when you give them a world that is limitless, where you can do whatever you want and create it however you want, and there are rules, but there are kind of no rules. They just are, they have the potential, I think, to be so much more creative than a human adult who is burdened by like the realities of the world.
Yeah. Like a human adult looks at playsets and sees a tool for a rule system that they've been playing and how can they adapt it to their rule system and how can they adapt it to this narrative that they've already built that like follows all of these other rules. And like, they have a lot of questions as to whether or not it's going to fit into their paradigm. And then a kid looks at playsets and they just go nuts. Like they start building things and they're playing and like, it's like a kid with a bucket full of action figures. Like they react the same way. They're like, hey, this is just a bunch of toys and I can do whatever I want. And look at this cool thing that I can make dance. And like, that was very rewarding to see the reaction from kids. And my nephew, who is, I think he just turned 7. He might still be 6. I think he just turned 7. Is like obsessed with it. Loves it. Yeah. Kids respond to it much more. And it is definitely that, like, imagination. Kids just play. They know how to play. Like, everything immediately has a story and a name and a personality and, like, a funny way of talking. And it's all real and fleshed out and, like, full. And they don't have to work at it. It just comes naturally.
So when you were younger, when you were, you know, before you were burdened by adulthood, what were some of the things that you like to, you know, create with and make and explore?
So I was very lucky on two fronts. I had very supportive parents who were into art, and a dad who was in, like, the early days of the tech industry. So, like, I was using, like, digital art applications at the same time that I was learning how to read. Like, it's just always been something that I've done. And the other point where I was very lucky is I fell in with an amazing group of nerds in high school who were all into making stuff and telling stories together and playing games together and, like, looking at awesome books full of crazy pictures of elves and Vikings and witches and monsters. And isn't that stuff super fun to draw? I definitely was obsessed with fantasy films from the 80s. Labyrinth and The Dark Crystal, and
there's so many good ones. I forget when Willow came out. Is that the 80s?
Oh,
or
my God. Yeah. I saw Willow in the theater.
Oh, wow.
As a kid. Like, that's still, like, a formative memory of seeing Willow in the movie theater as a small child. And it's heartbreaking that movie is so hard to find these days because it's so good.
It is so good. There were a lot of movies around that time with that same, what was that wacky, The Last Unicorn? Was that it? It was a wacky movie with maybe Tom Cruise.
Oh, no, that is called Legend.
Legend, that's it.
It's a Ridley Scott film.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Also one of my favorite movies. Tim Curry plays essentially the devil. I think they call him Darkness, but he's... If you are a fan of Tim Curry,
oh, man,
it is one of his greatest performances. There are many, like, obsessions in my life that I can draw back to that film. Yeah, that's a good one. Never Ending Story is another one.
Fantastic. There was a lot of exploration in, like, the late 80s, early 90s of movies with children. With young people exploring the concept of darkness. And the Neverending Story was one, Labyrinth was one, like this idea of darkness. But then it was always done in a way where the children were experiencing something that was terrifying, but also kind of playful, so that it sort of tempered how terrifying it was. Like the Goonies was very much like they're up against these people who kill people. It's a very scary situation for children to be in, but they're like exploring a pirate ship and, you know, going through underground caves, and like it made it a little bit less terrifying. It was an interesting time for movies.
It was. I mean, like Time Bandits is also a film of that era. And that's, you know, like you have this kid with like robbers and murderers in the middle of war in really dangerous situations where people are being murdered, but it's all fun and whimsy.
Yeah. And what was the Cloak and Dagger was like that too.
Yeah.
Just like so wacky. Like which adults in this world were making those movies?
Yeah. But then you look at like what's coming out of like our generation, or the generation that grew up on those films, you know, like Adventure Time is something really special. And the stuff that has kind of come from that place, like Steven Universe is something else that's like really special. And that's, I mean, the Rebecca Sugar is our age, you know, like this is our generation making these new amazing amalgamations of like video games and old movies and like all of these weird tropes that were kind of the realm of childhood for us that were completely ignored by our parents. Like, oh, that's just weird kid stuff. And it's like, no, there's something really amazing and inspiring here. And there's something more to it that if we kind of reshuffle some pieces, like you can tell a really incredible story using these tropes that were just kind of, you know, Saturday morning filler. And there, it's not anymore. And that's, I don't know, that's something really special. And I don't know if it gets as much attention as it should.
Aside from the digital art that you do, when you sit down to be creative, what other things do you tend to gravitate towards?
I mean, the sketchbook is always the default for me. It's always been pen and paper or pencil and paper is like the default. And the digital interface that I use at this point is basically just like, I finally gotten to the point where I have a digital equivalent of pencil and paper. Yeah. Like I just within the last like few months switched over to an iPad Pro. And like, granted, I'm doing significantly less complicated work than I was doing on playsets. Like playsets required like the full processing power of Photoshop and like, and a not light computer. Like it was a lot of pieces, a lot of art running at the same time. I'm not currently doing anything that like processor heavy. So I'm doing the iPad Pro and the pencil, and I use Adobe Sketch mostly. Yeah, pencil and paper has always been like the default. I really love, I haven't done it in a long time, but I really love sculpture. I got really into like Sculpey when I was a kid, and I think it's the same thing. It was like I got into, there was this board game, Heroes Quest, which is like D&D light, like it's all the maps and stuff, and there's like and like really basic rules, and but it's open-ended, and like they encourage you to like make your own maps and like make your own stuff. And so I got into like making my own characters, so I would like make little Sculpey models of like D&D figures. And I mean, they were terrible. I was like 9, but I mean, like it was great. So I did a lot of sculpture, like small like maquette like people stuff in college, and I got really into like casting, so like mold making and like making plastic reproductions of stuff. So I've done like a fair amount of that.
I'm delighted to say that my conversation with Bronwyn didn't end there. We went on to talk for another 30 minutes or so about growing up in homes that encouraged us to be makers. We'll talk about some of the things that we each made as children, and we'll also discuss how we're working to encourage making in our own children today. And now I'd like to tell you about something I made this week. This past week, my husband and I made some seriously awesome memories. We spent 6 days down in Riviera Maya in Mexico on a vacation that was sorely needed. We had a beautiful view of the ocean, met some really wonderful people, and saw a part of the world that we hadn't seen before. It was good to have some time just the two of us. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. A special thank you to Bronwyn for finding time to chat with me while her toddler napped. Our music is by Chuck Salomon. Our logo is by Becky Carpenter. We get system admin support from Greg Thole. Now, go make something for someone you love.